Well, everyone can agree that 2020 was a terrible year. However, the year of MMA, it was pretty good, all things considered. Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, I think. This is Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. We're here with the fourth installment, final installment of the MMA year in review that was for 2020. Fitting. We are finally we're wrapping this up as the UFC calendar is set to begin on Saturday the 16th, kicking off a stretch of four shows in 8 days on Fight Island. So yeah, we wanted to get 2020 in the rear view, kind of wrapping up where we were the last 3 months of 2020. And interesting stuff as always, Paul Fontaine of WrestlingObserver.com and also Fight Game Media joining me as always. And yeah, this is, I mean, if you've been following along the series, this is more of the same. And COVID's been a thing, as you guys know, all this whole time. But in November, really kind of reared its ugly head, or one of its ugly heads, with causing the cancellation, the change of seven different main events in the span of a month. Now, a couple of those were injuries, non-COVID related, but there was just a mix of just crazy shit that was going on. So Paul and I cover October, November, December, and yeah, let's just get right to it. Your review, final part, let's go. Well, they say parting is such sweet sorrow, but Paul and I have spent, this will be start of 4 hours together, and it will be sweet sorrow, but Paul Fontaine joining me here to Fight Game Media, WrestlingObserver.com, helping finish off the year in review series. And Paul just pointed out that this first time in probably years we finished off the series before an actual UFC event takes place for the following calendar year, Paul. So we're I almost said spitting on all chiclets. We're firing on all cylinders, and then we're spitting on all chiclets. We'll say that.
That's a new one.
It certainly is. I don't even know where that came from. What was I just about to say? Let's see. So yeah, so this is again the year in view series. You guys have listened to all these here before, and obviously we're getting into October, November, and December, and you know clearly with you know what we talked about so far, just kind of scene setting with so many things, especially the last set of months. This is kind of closing out the series, and you know some of these things. I was thinking about this today. You know, as always, some of these events seem to be like the December stuff. It seems so recent because it was just last month. So we don't really have that, ever get that like historical perspective, even by like 6 months or something like that. But, you know, some of this stuff is interesting. And I'm sure, you know, as we do this series next year, you know, we'll look in the months of May, April or so, and all this stuff that's been kind of seeded will come to bloom.
Well, yeah. And given that, we don't necessarily have these kind of, on this site anyways, like the kind of post show analysis and whatnot for you and I, at least it'll be our first time talking about a lot of this stuff, even if it is recent.
True. Yeah. So yeah, so over 6,500 headlines I skimmed through for this year, as always, go through the archives of bloodyelbow.com, about 12 hours or so compiling every month, takes about an hour or so to kind of put together and edit and all that stuff. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed the series, and let's kick off hour four right now with October. So October, really, it was a tale of two stories when it came to MMA retirements and legends in the sport, two for different reasons. One from kind of the boom period era, the tough era, as you were, and then also one of the kind of the more recent era. So we had two different retirements, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and then Anderson Silva. And with always, we say retirement with an asterisk because, you know, in fighting, as in pro wrestling, no one ever truly retires. But for argument's sake, rather, discussion's sake, we'll kind of stick with this right now. Of course, this could change at any moment by the time you listen to this. Given the Conor McGregor-Dustin Poirier fight, something could change with everything. But we'll stick with this right now. So Khabib Nurmagomedov was having a... returning after the first time after about a year against Justin Gaethje, unifying the UFC lightweight title and also the Gaethje's interim lightweight title, which basically shouldn't even been mentioned because Gaethje didn't even want to mention it. Going in this fight, Khabib Nurmagomedov saying that Dana White had quote-unquote something special for him if he won after UFC 254. There was lots of Khabib retirement talk. Could this be it? There was talk of, you know, was he going to stick around to at least get to 30-0? And at UFC 254, he got to 29-0, rolling easily, relatively easy in the submission win over Justin Gaethje to unify the titles. This was an afternoon pay-per-view from Fight Island, so the rare afternoon pay-per-view for the UFC. He retired afterward, calling it good at 29-0, saying that following the death of his father, that his mother just didn't want him to fight anymore, saying that always wanted to fight with his father by his side, and this was obviously difficult for him, and so on. But however, he retired after this fight. It was later revealed he had broken bones in his foot, I think a broken toe and something else, and had mumps leading into the preparation for this fight, and almost had to pull out, but stuck through it, and absolutely was dominant and went over Justin Gaethje to formally unify the titles and remain the UFC lightweight champion. Again, even though he retired, the belt is still on him, something we'll discuss here in a little bit. Also on this show, Robert Whittaker going into a decision win over Jared Cannonier. That got pretty fun in the third round. Alexander Volkov picking up a TKO win over Walt Harris, and then John Jones afterward, of course, doing John Jones things, inserting him into the conversation about Khabib, insisting that he was still the greatest of all time, kept going on and on and on. He did this thing where, he's one of these guys that every time he defends the title, he claims it's a new title won. So he said he had like 12 or 15 titles versus Khabib's like five or six or something like that. One of those things where the math just doesn't work. The show, even though it did, it was in the afternoon, obviously, you can buy it at any time. It brought in about 675,000 pay-per-view buys. So we'll flip before we go to you, Paul, about UFC on Vegas 12 that also happened Halloween night, fittingly, in the past year. Uriah Hall knocking out Anderson Silva, the former middleweight champion, the former UFC great, knocking him out in round four. Leading into this, this was basically billed as Silva's retirement fight. However, in the days leading up to it, and his manager was keeping the door open that, well, maybe he might not be done fighting in the UFC, but this is his last time actually in the octagon. So that was kind of interesting. Afterward, Dana White saying that he was really pissed at himself, saying that he shouldn't have let Silva fight. It should have kind of stuck with his instincts and not let this gone through. Silva had one more fight left in his deal. We'll get to that a little bit later, but he was later released from his contract. So it's kind of interesting all around this. This was, obviously, as mentioned, in Vegas. You figured, the retirement fight of one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time, someone that did so much of made so much of an impact financially, and also in the sport for mainstream fans in the tough boom era, there would have been a little bit more pomp and circumstance. There was a couple rows of seats for his family there, but didn't really feel like, it was just kind of weird. Didn't really feel like they went all out for it. It was just really kind of odd. Also on the show, Greg Hardy picking up a TKO win over the Crochet King himself, Maurice Greene. But let's kind of get to the conversely, how these two are treated. So, Khabib, obviously, UFC lightweight star, the guy that beat Conor McGregor and did so in a way with a ton of people watching him, made a name for himself, seemed to, I want to say mainstream star, but certainly get a lot of crossover appeal in other sports. There was a lot of athletes tweeting that day about the Khabib fight, and it obviously picked up a lot of steam, even though he really hadn't fought that much. But then you had this other guy, relative to Silva. Silva had been the sport, obviously, during that really important period, which kind of paved the way for Khabib. However, UFC kind of treated these retirements and these things, obviously different situations leading up, but it was the reverence afterwards seemed to be a lot different in both cases. And granted, one going out in a perfect record and the other one, really just a really bad run, to be frank, over the past couple of years since that first loss to Weidman. Can I just talk about your thoughts about the retirements of both and thoughts on that?
Well, I think the key difference in how these guys are treated, at least on the surface, is the fact that Dana White obviously is trying to make nice with Khabib and hoping that he doesn't retire because he can still make the company a lot of money. I mean, this last show did 675,000 pay-per-view buys in the afternoon. And as we've talked about before, UFC... they're going to make the same amount of money no matter, whether the show did 675 buys or 675,000 buys. They're getting paid by ESPN, but they want to keep that relationship with ESPN going, and they need pay-per-view headliners. And if you've got a guy that can do that kind of business, then, they can you know, they can extend that deal, and they're going to be, you know, in a few years going to be renegotiating. So it's in Dana White's best interest to keep him happy, not to mention the fact that he's also, you know, managing fighters. He has his own little fight company, Eagle Fighting Championships, that's going to hopefully become a feeder system to the UFC. So, you know, he wants that relationship to be solid. Whereas with Anderson Silva, obviously his best days are behind him. I was kind of surprised when he originally signed that 8-fight deal. I mean, it seemed like he was at the end of his career. And I remember thinking, there's no way he's going to fight 8 more times. And sure enough, I mean, you know, he almost did. So, but these last few years, I mean, he's just been fighting these random shows, went from, you know, headlining pay-per-views to co-main event to fight night to, you know, like you said, fighting on Halloween against Uriah Hall. You know, and not looking particularly good. I think that Silva deserves better, but we've seen how Dana White treats, you know, former stars, we'll say, you know, like he for years with, you know, George St. Pierre, you know, even Tyron Woodley, who was at the top of his game, was constantly feuding with Dana White. But again, that was somebody that, it, you know, in Dana White's mind was probably more trouble than he was worth. Still never can explain the George St. Pierre thing, because that guy could still be headlining shows that do a million buys. So, but for whatever reason, I guess he just got off on you know, fighting with George St. Pierre, or dissing him anyways. But yeah, I you know, I think that again, though, the key is he just wants him to fight again. He wants that 30-0. And then I'm sure if he gets to 30-0, he's going to be pushing for, hey, let's go to 35, you know, because clearly Khabib is still the best in the world. I don't think that he is, you know, I don't think you'd favor any lightweight in the world against him, and very few welterweights, to be honest. So, you know, he could, if he wanted to, continue to go, but, you know, and you didn't really talk about this, but fact is he was fighting for his dad. He probably wouldn't even have fought this time, but he wanted to do one last fight for, you know, in memory of his father who had passed away earlier in the year. And when he was done, I mean, he was done. And I called it, like, watching the fight. I even put it on Twitter, like, we've seen the last of him in the octagon. And this is like, I hadn't even really heard much of the retirement talk, but just the way he broke down at the end of the fight, you could just tell, like, he gave it all and he was done. Now, whether or not he comes back, I mean, everybody changes their mind, or most people do, but Khabib's a different cat.
So. He is indeed. Yeah. And you brought up a point that I think, you know, I've definitely talked about on the show, the podcast before, is I hate how they booked Silva in these past couple of years. It's just, there are guys that they get to a point in the sport, like Silva, and you put them, like, they're out of title competition, but you can still draw with them. They can still main event with them. You can still do some fun things. And they didn't do that with Silva. And who knows how much of it, and these are things I'm always interested in hearing, like, what fights almost did get made? That's something that I don't hear enough about. Like, in interviews with fighters, like, what fights actually almost did get made? That'd be a fascinating series if you could actually get the truth of some of this stuff. But, I mean, you look at, like the apologies to the guys like, you know, Derek Brunson and Jared Cannonier, like, you know, they're trying to get them over, but they don't, these other guys over, but they're not, I think fans kind of know, like, a win over Anderson Silva does not mean the same thing as it did 5 years ago. So put them against other fun fading veterans and let them go out the right way. The fact that Silva Weidman 3 fight didn't happen, that was just begging to be made. Both guys just on the downside, there's history there. There's still questions with a lot of fans in terms of whether Weidman actually legitimately beat Silva, as crazy as that is. But those are things like the UFC just don't want to do. They're not interested in, which is unfortunate, because that's something that Bellator is really great at, but they just don't have, you know, they don't have the full kind of complement of names yet in order to do that. And sometimes they get guys that are way past their expiration date. But, you know, there's a way that you can, like, same thing with BJ Penn, and, you know, we talked about that kind of decline, but just there's certain ways to do it where you can put them against other fun names and just make a fun fight that doesn't mean anything. Not every fight in the UFC has to mean something. And I think that's sometimes where they get a little bit stuck on kind of their way of doing things is. And Anderson Silva is a great example. You know, he doesn't need to be fighting Jared Cannonier on a, you know, co-main or third from top, whatever it was, a pay-per-view in Brazil. that he did. I mean, that was just, it's boring. It's pointless. It doesn't really do anything for everyone. No one wants to see, you know, it's just not interesting. And you know, we talk about this a lot, but I agree that I just don't like the way that they booked him the past couple of years at the end.
No, I mean, and I think part of the problem is a lot of these guys that he could have had the fun fights with, UFC let them go, you know, to Bellator or elsewhere. Like I'm, you know, I was thinking about names as you were talking, and Jaygard Musasi, you know, Jacare Souza, you know, guys like that, Lyoto Machida, like that, those would have been fun fights for Anderson Silva that we never got to see. And we never will know unless, you know, if Bellator picks him up, but there doesn't seem to be much interest on that side. Surprisingly enough, maybe, you know, I imagine he'll show up somewhere, maybe one or something, but, yeah, like those kind of fights, you know, and Ryan and I were talking, I mean, Diego Sanchez, you know, skipping, well, I guess we probably won't talk about this. Like, I mean, he's announced his last fight, and I bet you they do give him like a fun fight, quote unquote, for his last fight, because for whatever reason, they're just going to treat him better than they've treated Anderson Silva for whatever reason. So that would have been nice to just see him go out again, though. When you look at the UFC roster, I don't know who that is. Yeah. Weidman, you know, would be one. That's still around that they could put him in against, but for whatever reason, they just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, maybe they did, and Weidman was interested, but yeah, those would be fun stories to kind of hear about. But we move on. So the rest of the results from a busy month of October, obviously Fight Island in full swing. Fight Island 4, Holly Holm outlasting Irene Aldana in a main event. That was a rescheduled fight, and Holly Holm picking up the victory there. Jermaine Duranemi returning. Impressive submission win, choking out Juliana Pena. Carlos Condit returning after a long layoff to defeat Court McGee via decision. Fight Island 5, Corey Sandhagen rebounding after his defeat to Aljamain Sterling, picking up a big win over Marlon Moraes by TKO. Really fun TKO. I believe it was a head kick knockout if you haven't seen it. It was a good, interesting fight. A quick fight, fun fight. And yeah, Corey Sandhagen looking good there. Edson Barboza defeating Amir Americani in his featherweight debut, and then Joaquin Buckley, rather, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, one of these knockout of the year candidates, probably arguably has to be the knockout of the year. I would try to describe it, but just go search for it yourself. I'm sure anyone that is listening to this has seen it, but just this kind of step up turning kick, it was just awesome. So definitely check that out. And yeah, he is, Buckley's actually set to fight in this upcoming week, if I remember right. UFC Fight Island 6. Brian Ortega returning after more than a year off, cruising in a victory over the Korean Zombie, a grudge match. Wasn't really really an even fight. Brian Ortega just looking awesome, new shaved head look, donating the hair to charity, as we learn after the fact, but looking fantastic. And he earning a shot at Alex Volkanovski at some point in 2021. That should be a great fight. We'll get more of that in a minute. Jessica Andrade returning and then defeating Caitlin Chookagian. And then also, Dana White saying that the winner is going to get the next featherweight title fight. Bellator 248, they made their debut in France. MVP winning a snoozer. This is just a boring fight over Ross Houston. And then still saying he wants... oh my God, who is the one that beat MVP in the tournament now? Not Lima, right? I am completely
asking the wrong guy.
All right. Well,
I want to say Paul Daly, but it wasn't Paul Daly either.
Yeah. Yeah. I cannot remember who it was anyway. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. So MVP winning a snoozer. I think you mentioned before Chet Gongo won. No one really cared. Very boring fights. Bellator 249.
It was Lima.
Yeah. So he was saying he still wanted Douglas Lima, and Lima's just kind of like, what? It's just so funny because MVP showed nothing in this fight, really. Yeah. And he's still saying he wants Lima. So good luck with that. Bellator 249, Chris Cyborg defending her featherweight title for the first time with her first submission win of her career over someone named Bien Cao. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce her last name. This was pretty much a nothing fight. This was, I believe, the Bellator debut on CBS Sports Network. Thursday night show. And then Bellator 250, Gegard Mousasi defeating Douglas Lima. We just talked about him for the vacant middleweight title. Let's see. So we'll go this next, this group of kind of fight announcements, and we'll get some your thoughts. Rafael Dos Anjos getting COVID. He had to be pulled out of his scheduled UFC 254 fight with Islam Makhachev. Cody Garbrandt officially out of his fight with Deiveson Figueiredo for Figueiredo's flyweight title, and Alex Perez was tapped for that 255 main event instead, and Robbie Lawler also had to pull out of his UFC 255 fight with Mike Perry. Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. I don't know if it was ever officially announced for UFC 256, but it was scratched from that show and then rescheduled, hopefully for early 2021. We still don't have an announcement on that yet. Peter Yan. So UFC 256, this is just a snake bit card in terms of headliners. And we'll talk about this more in a little bit. Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling was tabbed as a co-main. Angela Hill versus Tisha Torres as a rematch. That was scheduled for that. And also JDS versus Ciryl Gane. Corey Anderson making his Bellator debut at 251 against Melvin Manhoff. New fights were booked with Jose Aldo versus Chito Vera, booked for December 19th, and also Rob Font versus Marlon Moraes was talked about as a plan for later on in the year as well. And then UFC, it was rumored they were looking at Dominic Reyes versus Jiří Prochazka for a February main event, still to be officially announced. Thoughts on any of the other results or any of those fights that were scratched or announced?
You mentioned the Bellator show. I think I didn't even see the MVP fight. I was more, for whatever reason, interested in the Czech Congo Timothy Johnson fight, just because I wanted to see Czech Congo fighting in his home country. I watched the fight. I wish I hadn't. It was pretty bad. They fought in front of fans, which was interesting to see in 2020. And the fans were obviously solidly behind their home country guy. Johnson won a split decision. It was less said about that, the better. That Joaquin Buckley, or Joaquin, however you want to say his name, if anybody hasn't seen it, just watch the ABC show this weekend, because you'll probably see it about 15 times. I would say kind of like a Rob Van Dam, spin kick. If his opponent was holding a chair, I think the effect was about the same if he would have been holding a chair, because he just, KTFO, that guy, whoever that was. We'll be seeing him get knocked out probably for the next 10 years, like Terry Etim. Against the aforementioned Edson Barbosa. I gotta say, like, going over a lot of these fights, especially in the last part of the year, if you're voting for the Wrestling Observer Awards, keep in mind for the Booker of the Year, Sean Shelby, because the amount of changes that they had to make, and they still ended up putting on these cards and putting on some pretty darn good cards. I think he more than earned his money this year, because all the shuffling around that they had to do, and they still managed to get these events done, and really had like just card after card that was really, really good. I don't recall a bad UFC card, and it seemed like every week it was like, oh, this is the best card of the year. This is the best card of the year, right up until the last show. So, kudos to them. You went over all the different fights, and it just one after the other. We just got these great, great fights, and we got more to come.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the changes that Sean Shelby and Mick Maynard had to deal with as we kick off November. Let's go to some of the news from October and finish off the month. Israel Adesanya saying he wanted a super fight with Jan Blachowicz, and he was going to get an MRI for his oddness in his right pec. Now, I don't think we mentioned this on the last show in part three. And the win over Costa, but he had this weird, his right pec appeared depressed, or it was just really odd looking, almost shrunken. And a lot of people thought it might be due to PED use or something like that. But he said he was getting a MRI for that right pec oddness. We'll get to what he said was a reason for that as we get into November. He also went back and forth rather with John Jones on Twitter. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So that's that was nice. Chris Weidman claiming he could beat Israel Adesanya, which was respect to Weidman, but no. Dana White saying that the Israel Adesanya Rob Whitaker rematch made a lot of sense. Whitaker later saying he was not that interested in it, but he would do it, and that would come back to buy him a little bit later, as we'll get to. Everyone was offering to fight Khamzat Chimaev, Darren Till, Chris Weidman, Neil Magny threw his hat in the ring. And then Leon Edwards, unfortunately, Leon Edwards dropped out of the rankings because of inactivity, not his fault at all, as we talked about. talk about more of his sad story in a minute, offered to fight Chimaev. And then just like that, the fight was made and Edwards was back in the rankings. So that's how that works. Conn McGregor saying the Dustin Poirier fight, quote unquote, must happen in 2020. However, he later accepted for January, but he wants it in Dallas, Texas at AT&T Stadium with fans. Dustin Poirier later in the month teased a January 23rd date for the McGregor fight. And then Dana White saying that Conor blew it when it came to a Khabib and Conor coach season of Tough. To that, I say good, because Tough just simply takes two good fighters out of the mix for like a year. So no thanks. I'm glad that did not happen. UFC releases, as we'll talk more about this a lot. Yuri Alcantara, probably best known for fighting Uriah Faber on a, I think it was actually the first FS1 show that I was there for in Boston in August many years ago. The one that Chael Sonnen and Shogun Hua fought in the main event. Anyway, so we'll move on. So James Vick also got released, Sergio Moraes, and also other fighters as well. Bellator, you don't really see this with them. They had a slew of releases and interesting names. Frank Mir, Roy Nelson, Joe Warren, David Rickles, Joe Schilling, Rafael Carvalho, former champion, John Fitch, who had retired, Pat Curran, who had retired, and then also Rafael Lovato Jr., who we'd mentioned before, but had to unfortunately retire due to issues with his brain, and a slew of other fighters as well. Abu Dhabi said they were considering live audience for UFC 254, the Khabib Gaethje fight, but actually just turned out to be a small handful of invitees. Chase Sherman, a UFC heavyweight busted by USADA, suspended for 9 months. Dana White said he wanted Stipe and Ngannou the rematch for March, and Ngannou was getting frustrated. This would be a headline I saw a lot in October, November, and December, because he just simply wanted to get out there and fight, and no dates in mind are set for him. The Dana White sex tape extortion case we talked about, that lawsuit was dismissed. And Mike Perry, always interesting, asked fans to bid on the chance to be his corner man for an upcoming fight. His rival on social media, Darren Till, bid $5,000 to say he was going to bid $5,000. And then, of course, Perry later in the month was accused of multiple acts of domestic violence. Thoughts on any of those headlines?
Huh. Well, for the least surprising news of the year, I think we got our winner there in Chase Sherman getting busted by USADA. Just Google him, take one picture and be shocked that he hadn't failed before. All these releases, yeah, was kind of surprising. The most surprising thing about Bellator releasing Joe Warren is that Joe Warren was still under contract. The time I started watching Bellator, which is a long time ago, I've been watching Joe Warren. I saw him fight in Japan a few times. So, he had a good career, and as did a lot of these other guys. David Rickles was surprising, just given that, you know, he had that memorable entrance. I think he had the most wins, and if not the most wins, definitely the most fights in Bellator out of in any weight class. And it's kind of sad to see him go, because he was always entertaining to watch. But given the fact that they're on a station that nobody watches, it's kind of tough to justify continuing to pay these guys or book them, and when they can just bring in all these kind of minor league guys. It was funny seeing all these guys clamoring to line up to fight the next big thing, Khamzat Chimaev, and the whole saga with Leon Edwards, like that you said, we're going to talk about. I mean, it's just another case of Dana White just kind of playing games with, really, really good fighters, and for whatever reason, dropping him out of the rankings and then putting him back in. I mean, what does that even mean? The UFC rankings, all due respect, I know some guys on the rankings committee, but nobody takes them seriously. It's just a marketing tool. And as soon as Edwards was going to fight again, he was going to be back in the rankings. So just like Conor is like, he hasn't fought in like 2 years, and he's, I think, number four on the pound for pound. Well, he fought last year, but yeah. He hasn't fought in the weight class he's fighting in. And he's ranked, like, so that tells you just about everything you need to know in about the UFC rankings. And the Mike Perry, Ryan and I have a segment on our show we've got to talk about. And last week it was Mike Perry, because he's just like, for him, it's like every negative stereotype that a non-fan or a casual fan has about UFC fighters is all wrapped up in Mike Perry. And for him to be doing nonsense like this, it's kind of great trolling that Darren Till, bid, and it would have been even better if he would have won. But the fact that he has his girlfriend cornering him and he's putting on, trying to get fans on social media to be his corner man, tells you how seriously he takes this. And at some point, I just feel like this is going to end badly, and hopefully UFC cuts bait with him before it happens, because he just seems like a ticking time bomb.
Very true. Let's move on to November, and we start out not with the results or news, but really kind of that the Paul mentioned with the, you know, Sean Shelby and Mick Magny, or Mick Maynard rather, having to basically just do an unbelievable effort and having to shuffle around cards sometimes like the day before. The UFC in November, 1 month, this right from the start of the month, right through December 1st, I believe, 7 changes to main events throughout the month, either through November or December main events. 7 changes, often multiple changes to the same show, if you can believe that. So we'll start with Darren Till. We just mentioned a minute ago, injured, and he had to pull out of his main event against Jack Hermanson. Amanda Nunes out of UFC 256. Her featherweight title defense against Megan Anderson. That fight was pushed to 2021. Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling, which I just mentioned a second ago for October, out of the show due to a Peter Yan issue, which apparently was due to a visa, supposedly. And then also Tony Ferguson versus Charles Oliveira was also added to that show as well. Then Islam Makhachev out of his Fight Island main event against Rafael Dos Anjos. And Paul Felder stepping in on 5 days' notice to take the fight against RDA and sign a new deal in the process. Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis was off the UFC Vegas 15 main event due to Blaydes testing positive for coronavirus. This was canceled the day before. The show was on Saturday. On Friday, that got revealed. Kevin Holland, one of the top fighters of 2020, really kind of a standout prospect, was pulled out of the UFC in Vegas 16 headliner against Jack Hermanson. Irony that he had to get pulled because he popped for the coronavirus. Later, he versus Jacare Souza was made for UFC 256. And then Marvin Vettori, who was supposed to fight Jacare, was moved back to the UFC Vegas show to headline against Jack Hermanson instead. So Jack Hermanson, 3 different opponents in the span of about a month. And then Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar announced for headlining the first show of 2021, which is going to be happening this Saturday as we talk right now. Chris Weidman versus Uriah Hall 2, and also Sean O'Malley's return set for UFC 258, and also in 2021. Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown, rumored for January, and that was the 3rd attempt to make that fight in their long careers, and obviously that fight is actually coming up this Saturday as well. Mike Perry, Michelle Waterson, Stephen Thompson, Macy Barber, Kelvin Gastelum, Greg Hardy, Clay Guida, and then PFL's Kayla Harrison, who won later in the month, all had fights booked for upcoming months. Paige Van Zandt, her bare-knuckle debut, announced for February Super Bowl weekend, and Alistair Overeem versus Alexander Volkov announced for the February 6th main event. So with all those, a chessboard. I don't even know if chessboard's even the right way, but just a constant shuffling, basically a deck of cards. This guy's out, put this one back in. This guy's out, put this back in. How do we have to move around here? And this was, obviously the coronavirus, I didn't even list through all these headlines. I didn't list every single fight that was changed due to coronavirus, but there was, cards that saw, I think we talked before, like 8 fights on them, 7 fights or whatever. Every card seemed to eventually have a fight affected, if not 2 or 3, by the virus, and it was constant shuffling, and also not to mention injuries and other things like that. But yeah, I mean, to your point earlier, they were able to make chicken salad of chicken shit a lot of times. And Dana White says, they this is what they do. They put on fights, they figure things out. There's really no other option for them to do that. I mean, they're getting the money anyway, so they're kind of, they have that nice nice parachute, so to speak. But also, this the UFC from July International Fight Week all the way through the final show of the year, I believe is on December 20th or 19th, if I remember right. They had a show every single Saturday. So every single week there was a UFC show. And it's hard when you're constantly having to book, 12, 13 fight shows, and you have one person drop off. You can't necessarily rob Peter to pay Paul every single time. But they were able to make it work. And as we learned, some of the late substitutions actually made for really outstanding fights.
Yeah, they for the whole year, even I think they're originally scheduled to do 42 events, and even with 2 months off because of the shutdowns, they ended up doing 41 events. So hats off to them, and I'm sure their their broadcast partners was very happy with them, and the fact is the numbers were pretty good. The pay-per-view numbers were outstanding. The broadcast numbers were fine, if not good. And then, of course, the quality of the shows, as we've talked about, was great. I do hope that, you know, when you look at a guy like Jack Hermanson, who, you know, had to go through three different opponent changes, and then ended up losing to a guy that he was favored to beat. I hope they factor that in, you know, giving him, you know, future matchups and considerations, you know, based on the fact that, you know, these opponent changes, it's not easy. And these guys are just, you know, like you said, on sometimes the day before the fight, they get an opponent change. And right. There's a lot of guys, like if famously you remember John Jones years ago, they had to cancel a pay-per-view because he refused to fight Dan Henderson on short notice, like a fight where he had almost no chance of losing. And in this case, we've got guys taking fights that they have a very real chance of losing. And really, in a lot of cases, these are guys that, are, you know, their careers are on the line. Like if they don't win, either they're really pushed down the card, or in some cases, you know, they might not get another fight. So I know that UFC likes to they factor that in, I think, when guys take late fights. Like if they lose, they get another fight when they typically might not have. But it was just crazy. And it was like every day you'd log on and say, okay, which fight did we lose today? And especially, you know, Thursday, Friday of fight week, it was like, okay, you know, you're going to lose some fights. Let's just hope it's not this one, you know? And that was kind of like my feeling every week. And then, so when we talk about cards and you get hyped up and everything, like, yeah, it's Tuesday as we're recording and I'm starting to look at Saturday's card and get excited for it. But yeah. I know better. And I'll have a look at that card again on Friday and see what's still left. So hopefully, but you know, I will say that the Fight Island cards tend to hold up a little bit better just because they have an actual bubble there. Mm-hmm. So I think UFC did recognize, and we'll probably talk about, you know, in a little bit about how they made some changes to how they're doing things when they're doing shows in Vegas, because they realized that this is not it. And one other thing I wanted to say about this, like a lot of fans were looking at this and saying, oh, you know, UFC's got to do a better job with COVID because they're losing so many fights and all this. And the fact is the reason that, because they were doing a good job with COVID, is why they had all these fights canceled, because they're testing everybody and they weren't letting them fight. And kudos to them for that. It was just a matter of the fact of the fighters that were, you know, probably not practicing safe, you know, recommended policies when they weren't under the UFC's watch. Or, you know, they get to Vegas and they were going out to eat and drink and gamble and who knows what else, and then coming down with COVID. So they've made some changes, and good for them. And the fact is they're testing all the time and they're catching the guys that have it, which is good.
Yeah. Had they not put some of those protocols in place, a lot of other fighters could have got it, personnel, yep, all that stuff, and then everything goes to hell. One other note is that a lot of these fighters, they don't have a choice when it comes to a late second opponent. A lot of these guys and girls have made money throughout the course of your fighting because of COVID, and they're kind of waiting to see what's going on. There's some people who were fighting no matter what. But a lot of cases, guys are like, look, I have no other choice. I can either not take this fight and go back and wait on the shelf, or I can just say, screw it, go in there and try to make some money and kind of go from there. So, yeah, it's the fighters definitely were very overlooked when it came to the year end kudos that would the year end slings and arrows that came the media's way did not go conversely to the fighters and camps and all stuff. We'll talk about that when we get December. Let's get some results for November. UFC 255, Deiveson Figueiredo submitting Alex Perez, last minute replacement, actually last month. To retain his flyweight title, his first defense of that title. And then Valentin Shevchenko retaining a relative snoozer over Jennifer Maya to retain her flyweight title. Mike Perry missed weight very badly to still decide to dab on the scale. And after that, classic Mike Perry fashion, then loses a decision to Tim Means. Paul Craig submitted Shogun Hua to strikes, out of all things. Caitlin Chikagian defeated Cynthia Cavillo in a fight that, you know, Chikagian obviously had challenged Shevchenko before. I think UFC had put this together to try to give Cavillo a big win and elevate her to a flyweight title shot. Big Dana White favorite. Of course, that was not to happen. And then afterward, Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno, who also was on this card, won. They agreed to fight in less than a month's notice on the December pay-per-view, the Malign 256, to kind of help save the show. So we'll talk about more about that fight in a minute. It's kind of like, what is going on? Everything was so crazy. They're like, we'll do anything. So two guys that won pretty quickly, and they were able to pair them up on the next show. And boy, are we glad that they did. UFC Vegas 13, Glover Teixeira, still, you know, time does not affect this guy. The second run is incredible, submitting Thiago Santos in a very fun fight. Speaking of time not affecting fighters, Andre Arlovski picking up another win, a slight upset over Tanner Boser. And Dana White hinting that Glover Teixeira could get the next lightweight title shot over Israel Adesanya. We haven't mentioned that title shot. We'll get to that in a minute in news. UFC in Vegas 14, Rafael Dos Anjos defeating Paul Felder in a very tough decision. This was a good effort by both guys. And then Chaos Williams in making an impressive knockout victory here. Kind of a fun name and kind of a cool story. And then pick up a big knockout win at UFC in Vegas 14. And finally, UFC in Vegas 15, Anthony Smith submitting Devin Clark in the first round. This was originally the co-main event for Blades versus Lewis, and then that getting bumped up in the last minute to the main event slot. And some Bellator. Bellator 251, Corey Anderson picking up a big TKO win over Melvin Manhoff. Bellator 252, Mauricio Pitbull defending his featherweight title against Pedro Carvalho, and Emmanuel Sanchez up next for him as the featherweight Grand Prix rolls on. And Bellator 253, also in the featherweight Grand Prix, AJ McKee submitting Darian Caldwell, former champion, to advance. And then finally, the big boxing match of the year, really one of the biggest combat sports pay-per-views of the year. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., 250-year-olds getting after it. They went to a draw. An unofficial draw and all that. Jake Paul in the undercard knocking out former NBA player, former Boston Celtic, Nate Robinson. Thoughts about all of that? Mike Tyson, my God.
Yeah. Did you buy that show?
I did not buy it. I watched it on Periscope.
Yeah, I didn't buy it. I didn't watch it. I did see the Nate Robinson knockout just, you know, on social media.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, good for the people that bought it. Sounds like they enjoyed the show. Tyson, from all accounts, looked better than most people thought he would. Just for me, like, they flat out told you ahead of time, this isn't a fight. There isn't going to be a decision. There isn't going to be a winner. I just shake my head at people that bet on this fight. Like, you know, if you were betting on anything but a draw, you're an idiot, because they told you there wasn't going to be a winner. You know, nobody was getting knocked out. It was just, you know, and I guess from what it spawned, it looks like we're going to get a lot more of these fights. And I, you know, I think we're even going to see some MMA guys lining up to, you know, to go to the pay window, as they say, to see, you know, if they can score some points. I'm sure Chuck Liddell will, you know, dip his hat into the pool soon. You know, a lot of those results were, I was looking back, one of the first ones you mentioned, the Caitlin Chookagian, the blonde fighter. That's her nickname. I'm not just saying, you know, calling her a blonde fighter. That one was a really bad result, I'll say, for UFC, because Chookagian, I think she's fought Valentina Shevchenko at least once, if not twice, and hasn't looked even close to good. So they were hoping that Calvillo would get the win and get a title shot, and now they really don't have anybody like even close to lined up for Valentina Shevchenko, and she's pretty much cleaned out that division, and she can't really move up because she's already lost to Amanda Nunes twice. She's way too big to move down. So it's that flyweight division in for the women in UFC is kind of in limbo right now while they wait for somebody to kind of emerge from a crowd of contenders. The Figueiredo and Moreno, like, that is, it's so incredible that these guys, they fought and then fought again like 3 weeks later, because I think they said the longest, like, I was wondering if there had ever been the same title that headlined two straight pay-per-views. And I don't think it's ever happened, but they showed a graphic in one of the shows that it had been like, I think 8 or 9 weeks was the longest time between even title defenses of the same title. And this was 21 days. And not only Figueiredo defending twice, but the guy challenging him also fighting that close. Like, I don't think, as incredible as that was, I don't even know that people appreciate how incredible it is. And to be able to cut weight twice in that short time frame, and then to have the fight that they had was just incredible. So kudos to them, like, for stepping up and you know, bailing the UFC out, because you know, if they can't fight, like, I don't know what they were doing for a main event on. I mean, I guess you would have gone with Ferguson Oliveira, which, you know, is a fine main event for a fight night. You know, and really, like, if there was a title on the line, it would have been a great fight too. And it was probably the fight that most people were interested going into on that show. Still, like, I just can't say enough about those two guys, and I think they both improved their stock a lot. It'll probably be a few months, or, you know, maybe half a year before we see either of them again after the war they had. But kudos to both of them.
Let's go to some of the news of the month. Dana White saying, as they're just referencing, Israel Adesanya versus Jan Blachowicz was a go, champion versus champion for the light heavyweight title. Also saying that Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor is a done deal, and that as of that point, Khabib Nurmagomedov was still the champion because they had some talking to do. And remember, I mentioned Robert Whittaker. He's saying he does want Israel Adesanya after all. He denies saying otherwise to Dana White. This is a headline I saw a lot over the last 2 months of the year in doing these scans, is basically Robert Whittaker petitioning for that title and saying he wasn't fighting anyone else until he got it. But the way he kind of phrased it before didn't exactly do him any favors. So who knows when he gets his next opportunity, his next title shot and all that. Adesanya saying that too much marijuana was a reason for his weird pectoral muscle. I believe he said that in an Instagram video while smoking a joint. So there you go. Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier, despite the fight being a done deal, they were both still complaining publicly to Dana White. Poirier was saying stuff about Dana White. It was just a really weird, like, the promotion of this fight, or the lead up to it, is quite something in terms of both guys wanting to make the fight on their own, and then that not happening, and then McGregor won the fight in Dallas, and then Poirier complaining still and all this stuff. Anyway, the fight was reportedly official for UFC 257, then Dana White shot that down saying it was not official, even though he had previously said it was a done deal. So, yeah, that's a typical fight promotion in 2020 with big names. Greg Hardy saying he is, quote-unquote, an innocent man. We'll leave that one alone. John Jones, conversely, chased off a would-be intruder as New Mexico home with a shotgun. That was a video that made its way around. Ultimate Fighter now says it's going to be returning for season 29 in March. At this point, we still don't even know the coaches yet, I believe. Tito Ortiz, politics season, elected to the Huntington Beach, California City Council. We'll get to more of that in a minute. Dana White saying that they are trying to work on loosening pot rules with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. However, you can't still fight while you're high, and that, you know, they'd the cannabinoid level had been raised up, I believe, 300%, and so on. This was in response to a couple fighters getting busted, I believe Nico Price, who we'll mention in a minute. Canelo Alvarez released from his Golden Boy DAZN contract. We don't really mention boxing a lot on here, but I bring that up obviously because that was a big business story, given that DAZN was such a big player in the combat sports space and with Bellator. And obviously we talked about some of their issues during the pandemic, but Canelo Alvarez simply getting outright released and becoming a boxing free agent and eventually going back to fight for DAZN in a one fight deal. EA Sports extending their UFC contract to 2030. Mark Coleman had a heart attack, drove himself to the hospital. Very Randy Couture-esque, another UFC veteran that era. That reminds me of that awesome Couture and Coleman fight. But yeah, so Randy Couture ended up walking to the hospital after having a heart attack while training, but Mark Coleman drove himself to the hospital while suffering a heart attack, and I believe appears to be okay. Scott Coker said he was not interested in signing Anderson Silva, and that revealed that Rampage Jackson is now a free agent. Zuffa Boxing apparently appears dead. No big surprise there. Fabricio Verdum signed with the PFL. The promotion called him the MMA GOAT, which no one has ever called Fabricio Verdum. MMA and politics intertwined again. I bring this up. I mentioned the Ortiz thing, but you know, all month long there was you know, all these, you know, again, I don't care what side you're on, but the pro-Trump side, there was plenty of QAnon support among the MMA community. It was just really, really strange. Really a strange month for politics, but in MMA being intertwined and some of the opinions of some of those just not really fitting with reality, but we move on. Anderson Silva was formerly released from the UFC along with UCA Formiga and possibly more fighters to come. Cody Garbrandt revealed he was still feeling the after effects of having COVID-19. And if one of the more bizarre MMA videos of the year, a 500-plus-pound man lost to a, I think it was approximately 115, 125-pound woman. This was something I believe is over somewhere in Russia, I believe. And then Bellator ended up signing her later on. Dana White revealed to all of us that we're all going to get COVID. It's just going to be just like the cold and the flu. Everyone's going to get it. And Mark Ratner was announced for the UFC Hall of Fame. Thoughts on any of that?
Well, you kind of joked about Fabricio Werdum and being the MMA GOAT. And I will say that there was a brief period of time when you were hearing that talk, probably right after he beat Cain Velasquez. You know, and he also had was the first guy to beat Fedor when Fedor was relatively close to his prime. So I did hear a few people saying that, you know, you could make a case for Fabricio Werdum as the GOAT, but obviously that was short-lived, and I don't think anybody seriously would ever consider him as that now. That video, if you haven't seen it, you know, find it. It was just kind of a shocking or a humorous video. And then the fact that Bellator signed that woman, that 125 woman, is one of the least surprising things that I heard in 2020. The Mark Ratner Hall of Fame announcement was very nice. I remember it was on a show. They announced it and he was there and his family was there, but he wasn't aware that it was going to happen. So watching that kind of play out on television was, one of the feel good moments of the year in a pretty shitty year, pardon my French. John Jones story. I mean, other than like Walter White, is there anybody that gets into more trouble in New Mexico than John Jones?
I know.
It's supposed to be a nice place to go. And John Jones, just trouble seems to find him. Or yeah. He finds it.
Well, this time trouble came looking for him, and he was he was ready to fight back. So yeah, John Jones always in the news, and we're going to talk about him more in just a minute. So we're finally at the end.
John Jones and Walter White. Let's book it.
It's John Jones and Walter White. Exactly. Oh man, I was going to do a Walter White impersonation, but can't really pull that off right now. Anyway, we move on to December. We're at the end, Paul. Final month of the year. Looking back, the year 2020. We start with the results. UFC 256, we've talked about this a little bit in the past few minutes. Deiveson Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno went to a majority draw. This is a classic, regarded as arguably the best flyweight fight of all time. This was outstanding, probably I would say the second best fight of the year behind Yan Jacek and Wiley Zhang. This was outstanding. This whole main card, arguably the main card of the year. And this was one of those shows that I maligned it going in. I'm like, this just does not seem that interesting going in. There were some more interesting fights to me the next week, and it was just kind of a show. We talked about just a snake bit card, but it came through in spades and gives, you know, Dana White that much more fuel to say, look, you can't judge a fight and a card until afterward. And there's arguments with that, but regardless, Kevin Holland picking up a awesome knockout from the bottom against Jacare Souza, and then Ciryl Gane, a big TKO victory over JDS, a changing of the guard there. Heavyweight Charles Oliveira dominating Tony Ferguson in the co-main event and really kind of a changing of the guard there. Mackenzie Dern picked up a big victory. Again, just an outstanding main card. There was a lot of fun on the undercard as well. Chase Hooper, this young guy, picking up a Hail Mary win, but kind of he was getting beat around, picked up a big submission win. This was a lot of fun. UFC on Vegas 16, Marvin Vettori. Talked about him. Late fill-in for Jack Hermanson. Fight of the year candidate. This was another top 10 easily from the year. This was a lot of fun as well. Him picking up a big victory and putting him on to, you know, some interesting conversations for his next fight is interesting how that works. Matt Wyman, longtime MMA vet, returning for, I think, it, you know, it's one fight a year or whatever. Absolutely sent to hell on a slam on the mat, knocked out. And retired shortly afterward, which was probably the best decision for him. Several fights were removed off the card due to COVID. And then Jamahal Hill, if I'm pronouncing that right, kind of a new face on the scene, knocking out Ovince St. Preux at light heavyweight and making his name known in the UFC. UFC Vegas 17, Stephen Thompson dominating Jeff Neal. This was the final event of the UFC calendar for the year. Jose Aldo defeating Chito Vera. Looking pretty good at bantamweight. And then Anthony Pettis defeating Alex Morano in what would be his last UFC fight. We'll talk about more of that in a minute. Marcin Tybura kind of got beat around by Greg Hardy on the feet. And then once he got into the mat, this was like black belt, white belt level stuff. Simply submitting, beating up and then submitting Greg Hardy and picking up a victory. Rob Fonte, brutal TKO over Mara Marash, marking, you know, reminding everyone what he's about at 135 pounds, and Jose Aldo later calling out TJ Dillashaw in a fight that I would not mind seeing. Bellator 254, Juliana Velasquez defeating Imelle Leigh McFarlane, Dave Meltzer favorite, to grab the women's Bellator flyweight championship. This is, again, a Thursday night show on CBS that I think we talked about before that no one was really talking about at all. Rizin 26, Kyuji Horiguchi returning after a long absence due, I believe, it was a knee injury. Looking awesome, regaining his bantamweight title and probably one of the best fighters, not in Bellator, not in the UFC. We'll see if he returns to Bellator, and as they have done some co-promotion in the past. And finally, Mark Hunt returning to boxing and then losing to a former rugby player. So that is what that is. Thoughts on any of those results?
I mean, we've talked about the Figueiredo Moreno fight. The funny thing about that, obviously, there's two keys to that fight being a draw. Number one was the fact that obviously of the penalty point in the third round for one of the worst low blows you're ever going to see. He pretty much kicked his nuts up into his stomach. A lot of people and myself included thought that fight was over after that, but Moreno managed to come back, and in a lot of scorecards people had him winning that round, and then with the point deduction having a 10-8. So that right there was the reason for the draw. But as well, when you looked at the judges' scorecards, the fifth round was a pretty clear round for Figueiredo, but one of the judges actually gave it to Moreno. And if that judge had scored that, you know, round, we'll say properly, then Figueiredo would have won a majority decision. So it was, I don't think anybody minded seeing a draw, though, based on how that fight played out. And the fact is we'll probably get to see them running back again on a full training camp. And I think just about everybody that saw this will definitely pay to see that again. And then hopefully word of mouth means that it does a little bit more business than whatever it did this time. So, but that was a great card. I saw a lot of people picking that as their card of the year. You know, Oliveira, you know, all just finishes up and down the card. And then, you know, some really impressive, like that Kevin Holland KO, I mean, of Jacare Souza, you know, like on the ground, on his back, he knocked out Jacare Souza. I mean, that's just so improbable. And then the fact is Holland is such a great trash talker, and just to come, he was trash talking during the fight. He came back after the fight and he's calling out everybody under the sun. You know, just one of the most, probably one of the guys that made the biggest name for himself in all of 2020. He was my pick for Fighter of the Year, honestly. Kevin Holland was. So I just thought he just had a great 2020. Some of those other results, you know, there's not a lot there, more or less like holding serve. I like the Stephen Thompson, that decision. I mean, I think he proved that he, you know, he's got one last good run left in him. He took a guy that Jeff Neal, a lot of people were calling a future title contender, and just schooled him. And he's still, like, he's 37, but he hasn't taken a lot of damage. The way he fights, he looks like he's 29. You know, just he's got no damage, probably not a lot of head trauma compared to like fighters that have, you know, the kind of career that he's had. So if he can put together another 2-3 wins, you could easily see him, especially the fact that Woodley is no longer the champion. Nobody wants to see Woodley Thompson again, but certainly Thompson Usman is a very interesting matchup. And then the Bellator story was interesting, because I'm a big fan of Imelle McFarlane as well, and I wanted to see this fight. And so when I knew it was happening, I turned on DAZN, and with like no fanfare, that contract with DAZN ended. Like, they didn't announce it. It just didn't happen. Like, that was the first show that DAZN didn't simulcast, and it's done. Like, they're, you know, DAZN pulled out. And it was, you know, you're left on CBS Sport Network, which nobody has. And, if you know, most people that do have it probably don't even know they have it. And I certainly don't. I don't even have the ability to get it. So until they can get some sort of another deal, I'm kind of shut out of the Bellator game. I can still watch the prelims on YouTube, but the main cards are, I have no way to watch them.
Hmm. Weird.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
All right. So let's go to some of the news here. Let's see. So we'll go to this section here. Leon Edwards testing positive. Poor Leon Edwards tested positive for coronavirus. So his fight was pulled from the UFC in Vegas 17 headliner. against Hazmat Chimaev, and we talked about that as part of this, that huge rush of changes that had to be made over a 30-day stretch. So the aforementioned Stephen Thompson versus Jeff Neal got that slot instead. There were a lot of Chimaev callouts. Kevin Holland was one of them. And then Edwards Chimaev was rescheduled for January 20th and then later postponed because Chimaev got coronavirus. And then Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny was elevated for the show that will take place next Wednesday at basically early morning hours on the East Coast here. Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier, finally official. We can all take a deep breath, exhale. The fight is official. No messing around. Conor McGregor revealed some buy rates for 2020 and thanking the UFC, claiming he had the highest pay-per-view buy rate of the year. I think we shared the exact totals. It was like 1.367 million or something along those lines. So revealing that and claiming that he had the best pay-per-view numbers of the year. Evander Holyfield saying he wanted Mike Tyson next. Jake Paul versus Floyd Mayweather. God, this is the sign the world is coming to an end. Or whatever it was in Sports Illustrated. Sign the Armageddon is upon us. I think that was what it used to be. Jake Paul versus Floyd Mayweather announced an exhibition pay-per-view set for February with some innovative pricing. This is the one thing I took from this, is that basically up to a million buys. It was, I think, $19.95 or $29.95, something like that. And then every like quarter of a million or something like past that, it went up. So the incentive is get to a million, pay less, and then after that, the longer you wait, the more you're going to pay, which I thought was really interesting. So it might be something as we kind of constantly observe how the pay-per-view works and the business works. It might be something down the road as we get more of these fights, or you know, this could be something. It's hard to believe ESPN might try something like this, but you never know down the road, maybe especially for a show that might need a little bit of a surge. Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. popped more than 1 million buys, which was a big surprise, but they've got one of these, you know, welcome surprises of the year in terms of numbers. Triller, the social media company that backed this whole thing, making their investment back and then some along with Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. Dana White saying he was going to send Amanda Nunes after one of the Paul brothers. And it was kind of just, you know, he was entertaining some of these questions he would get about the Paul brothers, but kind of being realistic as well, saying, you know, they don't want any of this. And it's kind of just, you know, he saw it for what it was, which is more publicity stunts in lieu of actual real fighting. Dana White saying he was at an upcoming meeting with Khabib Magomedov. Khabib bought the Gorilla Fighting Championships, I believe it was called, renamed it the Eagle Fighting Championships instead. So I believe they're going to come to Fight Pass, and who knows if Khabib's going to come back, but Dana keeps teasing that throughout this whole month of December was teasing that he didn't believe that Khabib was retired by any means. A judge granted the plaintiff's class certification in this UFC lawsuit. This is kind of one of those things that if you're really interested in the business side, this is a fascinating story. The UFC essentially being sued by what is now a class action of fighters. So these fighters, 1,200 or so, I believe, that fought within a certain time frame do not have to file individual lawsuits against the UFC. This is all dating back to basically fight purses and revenue or money getting suppressed because UFC kept buying up these other competitors. And so prices came down, salaries came down, so to speak, as a result. Pretty fascinating stuff. This is kind of known as the Kung Lee lawsuit, but a lot of names involved in this, and going to be an interesting story because as of the last week, it looks like basically all the books are going to be opened up for the UFC, which is going to reveal so much more business information than we ever knew possible. All the stuff that Dana White says that we don't know anything about, we're going to find out pretty soon. Dana White and the UFC releasing an anti-media video, which was full of errors and misdirects, essentially a big F you to the media for supposedly not wanting these shows to go on. It was incredibly just incorrect, the whole thing. Stuff taken out of context, stuff that didn't make any sense. But it was just this classic, I hate to say it, but a Trump-esque anti-media rant. However, as of last week, the video has been actually taken down following the disaster at the Capitol. So who knows if it was a suggestion to not incite any like fan versus media violence at UFC events or something like that, which would just be obviously terrible at any venue. But the fact we have to think of that is something else. Anyway, so Dana White is claiming that UFC broke every record they had in 2020, had an awesome year. Crazy because, again, they had fans for 3 months of it and still had awesome numbers. Dana White also saying that John Jones is ready to come back and was also eyeing Wiley Zhang. versus Carla Esparza for a title fight down the road, and would love to see Adesanya versus Jones in 2021. Good thing for him. All he has to do is make the fight. That's it. John Jones, there's some rumors that he would be groomed for the winner of Francis Ngannou versus Stipe Miocic 2, whenever that is. Paul Varlins, the polar bear, long ago UFC fighter and also a brief ECW wrestler, revealed that he was on a respirator and doing not too well due to the coronavirus. Tito Ortiz making lots of friends in his early city council run. There is a Twitter user, Borishina Depot, that does a lot of great memes and everything. He's doing a great job documenting Tito Ortiz's rough start to the city council, where a lot of people don't give a shit that he used to be a UFC fighter, and Ortiz doesn't believe in masks, a big MAGA guy, and just it is a mess, to say the least. And he's getting used to this life. That city council is not as easy as he may have thought, and people are just going to go over for him just because he's a name. Greg Jackson, considering a congressional run in New Mexico. UFC reportedly returning back to network TV, where for an ABC debut for January, which we knew was going to happen because it's happening this Saturday. Anthony Pettis declaring free agency, signing with the PFL, not Bellator, which a lot of people assume because his brother competes there. Rachel Ostovich and later Yoel Romero released from the UFC, a little bit surprising. Dana White saying that 60 more cuts or so were going to be coming. Initially, Bellator and PFL said they were not interested in Romero. Then Romero ended up signing with Bellator. And at the time, he said he was negotiating to fight top three at either 185 or 205 in the UFC before he was released. Rumble Johnson, talking about going back to the UFC nearly all year, was released, and he signed with Bellator to compete as a light heavyweight. Nico Price was suspended for 6 months due to marijuana use, and Yair Rodriguez got 6 months from USADA for a different offense. Nick Diaz, 99.99999% to return in 2021 the UFC. Management said looking at a new UFC deal. Dana White saying, who wants to see him? WWE's MVP, not Bellator, won a legitimate Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu World Championship, which I don't know if he's even talked about on Raw, or not really a big deal made of it, but yeah, he's a legit guy. Diego Sanchez started an OnlyFans account, and then ESPN at the end of the year announcing they were upping the cost of pay-per-views to $69.99. Also, the cost of ESPN Plus was increasing as well. Thoughts on those headlines?
That was a lot there. For me, other than, you know, obviously COVID, the biggest story in UFC in 2020 to me was their business and how well they did. Dana White said, you know, quote unquote, they broke every record. I'm not sure exactly what he means by that, but what they have said, and that, you know, can pretty much be backed up, is that it was their best year on pay-per-view since 2016. And when you consider the fact that pay-per-view has gone up in price in that time, as well as the fact that they're making a lot more money for their TV, I would say that it's probably very likely that their revenue was the highest perhaps that it's ever been. I was running some numbers and, you know, looking at the numbers we do have and kind of guessing at the ones we don't. And it seems like they probably did about 6 million buys on pay-per-view this year, which on 11 events is hell of a year. You know, we saw some huge numbers. The one Conor released, the 1.3 million. I know the Jorge Masvidal fight that he did, they also had claimed 1.3 million, which was, I think, later downgraded to 1 million, but that was domestic. So when you factor in, there's some conjecture on whether or not the Conor fight or the Masvidal fight had a higher pay-per-views, but either way, they're both super high. And then we had a number of shows that were in that 600,000 to 700,000 range, which is just incredible, because just a few years ago, like, nobody was doing those kind of numbers except for Conor and Ronda. And now we're seeing them on a somewhat regular basis. I think 7 of the shows had at least 600,000 buys, which is crazy. So, you know, good for them. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, with the pandemic, there's not a lot else to do. You know, people aren't spending money on travel. People aren't going to shows. People aren't going and seeing them at bars. So, you know, you're at home and probably got a few more buys than they normally would have got, but they still got them. So good for them. The UFC returning to network TV is a pretty big story, as we're going to see this coming week. The fact that it's on in the afternoon, I think, tempers the expectations a little bit, but it's still big for them. And it's a good platform to market the pay-per-view, which is coming the following week. So we'll see, you know, whether or not we get more of those. And I think a big story was the number of cuts, just in some of these names, like Yoel Romero, Rumble Johnson, Rachel Ostovich. Like, these are people that were names that at one point UFC was building around, and not that long ago, and they're just cutting bait now because these are fighters that are not going to be contending for titles. They're not moving business, and they're just not worth the price tag that they have. And the fact is, it makes that lawsuit really interesting, and to tie everything together, because the fact is these guys and gals get cut, and within days, usually they're signing somewhere else. So I don't know how anyone can claim it's a monopoly. This lawsuit, obviously we're talking about a number of years ago, so maybe things were a little bit different then, but it seems to me that it's kind of always been like this. Like, there's always been a competitor out there, whether it was Strikeforce back in the day, or World Series of Fighting, or Pride, or Dream, or, you know, like, there was always places for these fighters to go. It's not like WWE, where for 15, 20 years, they were the only game in town. So, and just further to that, like, the business, the stuff that's going to potentially come out of this is, I think it's going to be good for the fighters. Having that information out there usually means that athletes get paid more. So I do believe that UFC and even some of these other companies, I know Bellator just filed an injunction to not release a lot of these documents because they don't want people knowing their business. So this is a story to keep your eye on, I tell you, because either this is going to go away with a settlement, or we're going to get a lot of information that we never had before.
I would agree. I think settlement's probably realistic. But yeah, definitely something we'll be talking about a lot throughout the year. Finally, we'll wrap up a couple fight announcements really quick. Speculation that Michael Chandler, Justin Gaethje was going to be the co-main event for UFC 257. Instead, another great fight, Dan Hooker versus Michael Chandler. I can't wait for that one, part of the McGregor and Poirier card. Kevin Holland versus Derek Brunson set for the March 20th main event. That looks to be really good matchmaking there. Israel Adesanya, Jan Blachowicz, Amanda Nunes, Megan Anderson set for March's UFC 259. Jake Paul versus Ben Askren. Jake Paul, my God. So Jake Paul, the other Paul brother, and Ben Askren talking about having a boxing match set in February. I don't think that is happening at this point. I don't know if it ever was happening, but that was a thing that happened. I guess Askren pissed off, or Scott Coker pissed off Ben Askren by claiming that Paul would beat him. So that became a thing. Yeah, social media, really the best. UFC canceling a January 30th show that they really had not officially announced. UFC was looking at making, is looking at making Brian Ortega versus Alex Volkanovski for the featherweight title fight, for February. Frankie Edgar versus Corey Sandhagen moved to February. Joseph Benavides, Alexei Oleinik, Dominic Cruz, Rafael Dos Anjos, and also Mackenzie Dern, all seeing their next fights booked. Clarissa Shields, top female pro boxer, signing with the PFL. Ryzen said they were open to signing Anderson Silva. Big surprise there. Finally, Demetrius Johnson challenging for the one featherweight title in February. What took him so long? And also one, there was a story on Bloody Elbow. Kind of detail, a lot of shady business practices and a very bizarre promotion. Didn't really pick up much steam. Heard about a couple places, but yeah, one appears to be quite the place to fight and deal with. Thoughts on any of those as we wrap it up?
Demetrius Johnson, like, you talk about going for the featherweight title. So that's, I mean, you kind of, when you look at one, you have to kind of back up the weight classes a little bit. So this would be like him going for the bantamweight title in UFC. So that is kind of a big thing. And I think the fight that I've really wanted to see for a while now in that organization, and I'll probably go out of my way to see it if they book it, is Demetrius Johnson and John Lineker. So I'm hoping that this somehow leads to that down the road. The Clarissa Shields is a big one, and the fact that she's going to PFL, I think, is probably telling, because a lot of people are able to somehow get out of their PFL contracts to go to UFC. So you would think that the end game here would be eventually a fight with Amanda Nunes that they had kind of set up at one point. I think she was cage side for one of the fights in 2019. So that, you know, they were kind of laying the groundwork for that. You talked about the two title fights set for UFC 259, and just recently, they've now added a third, the one we've talked about a few times, Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. So as of right now, there's three title fights set for, you know, March. We'll see if any or all of those happen, but, that's shaping up to be a really good card. And yeah, just the, oh, the Hooker Chandler fight, like to me, that's, that is like the hardcore fight fans, really the hook on that, pardon the pun, on that card. Like, you know, obviously the casuals are buying the Connor, but having Michael Chandler on that card was really, really important, because I think the fight that they're hoping to somehow make out of this is Michael Chandler and Conor McGregor. So if both those guys are able to win that, those fights, they can certainly make that fight down the road. But if Daniel Hooker manages to, you know, win what I would think would be a mild upset, you know, he puts his name into that mix, and all of a sudden, you know, can you imagine a Conor McGregor Hooker card in Australia or New Zealand? Like, that, I mean, it's going to do amazing pay-per-view business, but you're going to sell at a stadium and at pretty high ticket prices. So, you know, when fans are allowed back later in the year. So they can't lose with this matchmaking. And even if Conor loses, like we've seen before, like it doesn't affect his drawing power at all. So I just think that UFC, as good as 2020 was, they're really set up right now for a pretty huge 2021 with all this stuff.
So, I mean, everyone stays healthy. And as we talked about, yeah, it's like a week of the fight, a couple of days before we'll get excited, and probably even the day of in this era that we're in. So we've finally come to an end. Like I said, 12 hours of research, 4+ hours of talking, 6,500 or so headlines reviewed, and all that stuff. But this is always my favorite ones of the year, because there's so much that we just keep looking. It's always looking forward. What's next? And everything in society and life. And for 4 hours, we get to just take a breath and look back at what happened and kind of learn some stuff from it, figure out and spend a little time with it. And these are, like I said, always my favorite four to do. And I'm glad you have, as always, joined me for this 4 hour odyssey, Paul. I see we've said it all. This was a bizarre year with COVID. This continues to be a bizarre year, I'm sure, as we look ahead. But hopefully, we're just hoping for health, for good fights. UFC has got their infrastructure established. It just the big question, as always, is what's going to happen with these fighters outside? When can they get it? You know, what does UFC do if a Conor McGregor happens to get it? You know, how do they adapt? And, you know, I think that we've kind of seen the answer to that, perhaps, is they've been able to adapt by simply slotting other guys and doing whatever they need to do. Seems going to be a lot of that, but really it's, you know, when are they going to have fans again? When are they going to go in a run a show outside the Apex, outside Fight Island? When is that first show going to be? How many people are going to be there? I'm sure it's going to follow suit with a lot of the other, you know, concerts or, you know, whatever, you know, when the vaccine starts getting more spread out, when people are comfortable and kind of who's going to be the first ones out, so to speak, going touring and things like that. A lot of questions for the year ahead. Going to be newsworthy when we do this December of this year. But yeah, quite a year. And Paul, thanks so much for doing this. And yeah, this has been a lot of fun as always.
Thank you for having me. It's one of my highlights of the year. And it's given me, you know, honestly, like, I give you part of the credit to the experience that I've gained in doing these shows with you, you know, kind of helped me launch my own podcast this year. So these are always a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing them every year with you.
Thank you. Yeah, so you can hear Paul, obviously, on, if you didn't know at this point, Fight Game Media on their Patreon, I believe it's their second tier. Yep. You can go to Fight Game, I believe they're doing, you guys are doing, is it a free month? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. There's a giveaway right now. I think if you go to the Fight Game Media Twitter, there's a giveaway. But then there's, I think Garrett Gonzalez is also just offering a few free subscriptions just to people that reach out to him just to try to sample it. I think he's looking for more like people that, you know, maybe people that have a lot of followers that would, you know, like kind of sample it and then retweet and get some interest out there. So if you're one of those people, if you're interested, and the box, like I said, it's boxing, MMA, and pro wrestling, kind of a mix of all three of those. So it's an interesting idea. So yeah, reach out to Garrett Gonzalez on Twitter and he can set you up with, you know, a 1 month trial, and then hopefully you sign up and continue to support the Patreon.
All right, Paul, time for us to go back in hibernation for the year.
You bet.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for stopping by. You can check him out, obviously, on Fight Game and also this here website as well. And yeah, thanks to him for spending 4+ hours. And I will tell you again, as I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I want to try to pull it off for 2020. I did not, but I will for 2021. Next December, we will have a year review of both pro wrestling and MMA on this very website. I'll be doing both of them. Same format with wrestling as I'm going to do. Same format for wrestling as I have done with MMA. 4 shows, doing every 3 months, and you know I'll find some guests to do that with. But something I've wanted to do for a while. We don't do a great job of looking back on this website. I think just because, and really the industry in general, because there's so much looking forward. I mean, there's year in review list, right? There's best match. There's this. But really, kind of doing a deep dive like we do every single month and looking at the headlines and all these little things we forget. We don't get take a chance to look back. That's why I like doing this so much. There's so much shit that happens. There's so many things we forget about that you just can't appreciate where we went. And to kind of understand where you're going, you got to see where you've been. So I've wanted to do this for a while. I'm going to figure out a way to do it. And yeah, that's my promise, my pledge to you that we'll do a year in review wrestling series in addition to MMA. Starting next December. And hopefully by that point, we'll be in a very good position when it comes to health, when it comes to the world. Yeah, I don't want to get too preachy, but we deserve an easy couple of years, right? I think that it goes without saying. Before we let you go, again, the royal we, you need to read this story by Stephen Baracco on MMA Fighting about Spencer Fisher. Now, if you follow MMA, you have probably read about this, heard about this, seen this. It is, it's fascinating. It's a long read, but it's good. And long reads can be good. I know in this era, people don't read a lot, but again, if you read the Wrestling Observer newsletter, you used to read long stuff anyway, right? This is, Spencer Fisher was a guy that fought in the post, tough boom era, was notable for really exciting fights. Never a champion, but one of these guys that if there was a BMF title back then, that was regularly challenged and or fought over, what have you, this is one of these guys that would have been in that mix, and one of these guys that in the similar Mike Perry, Nico Price, Vicente Luque, fun fighter kind of like mix where you're always interested, outside the cage stuff aside, there's someone that you're always interested in. You see him on the card and you're like, huh, I can't wait to see this fight. That's what Spencer Fisher was. He's one of these guys, the Sam Stout, who we fought several times, obviously. Anyway, this is a story about essentially what happened at the end of his career. And it's infuriating. It's heartbreaking. It is insightful. And it's telling about the sport. It's telling about the people that run the sport. And it's not, so many people, I think, are adverse to hit pieces on Dana White, the UFC, that people that don't like any type of controversy or any type of criticism, rather, that's slung their way. But this is a story about what happens. This is the reality that's happened, not just for guys like Spencer, but so many other guys and girls throughout history and people that are going to be in the years ahead. This is a story we're going to keep hearing about over and over and over again. And it's sad. It's really sad. But it's something that I think if you follow the sport, it's good for you to be uncomfortable and understand that there is a dark side of every sport, and there is a very big dark side with MMA and the UFC, and also what obligation the UFC has to take care of these fighters with some form or fashion, with some sort of insurance retirement type thing, things like that. It's hard for me to understand anyone would root against it, but for some reason people are just so in the UFC's jock. It's okay to like something, but also say maybe they should do the right thing. And it's not in the story, but Dana White had a quote afterward because he was asked about this and Spencer Fisher, and he basically said that to paraphrase, that everyone's going to get this stuff, and even him, there's brain issues. Basically, that everyone's father's running into these things, and he put himself in the same camp as fighters, and that was 100% laughable. And I can't believe he associates himself that way. In the story itself, there's a quote from Dana that kind of did the same thing that Fisher recounted. And yeah, it just is unbelievable. Anyway, take the time to read the story. prepare to be uncomfortable and report back with your findings, as it were. All right. Appreciate the time you spend with me, or any, and I mean any and all of the podcasters on this very website. A lot of choices in your podcast day. Believe me, I know. And again, the time you spend with myself or any of these great podcasters is greatly appreciated, and all that. So until next time, have a great weekend. Enjoy the fights. Conor McGregor time is almost here. Go New Hampshire. Insert catchphrase here.